and welcome to On the Line. I'm Carl Richter. In this week's episode, Gazette reporter Aaron Brand interviews longtime Texarkana journalist Sabrina McCormick. It's a fascinating look at her recent travels and how they relate to life in Texarkana, her hometown. Here's Aaron.
If you listen to the local National Public Radio affiliate, KTXK at 91.5 FM, you have likely heard the voice of Sabrina McCormick. She's a longtime reporter there, covering everything from features to hard news. Full disclosure, she was also an education reporter at the Texarkana Gazette, back in our old Pine Street office days. One editor lovingly referred to her as Little Frizz. McCormick recently returned from a stay of well beyond a year in Northern Ireland, where she earned a master's degree in peace and conflict studies from Ulster University in Jordanstown, near Belfast. She graduated with distinction. Northern Ireland is a unique and beautiful place, and its people are resilient with a great sense of humor. If you've heard of the Troubles, the three-decade violent conflict involving Northern Ireland's Catholics and Protestants and England, then you know a little bit of the history there. But in Northern Ireland, Sabrina explored the rich culture, wandered the countryside, and met the people. She also plays the harp, which she'll do for us today, right here in studio. Sabrina is back in Texarkana for now, so we want to hear from her about what she learned overseas, particularly at this time of a worldwide pandemic, and what she enjoyed there. Well, Sabrina McCormick, welcome to On the Line and Star Bear Studios here on Texarkana Gazette.
Wow, this is really cool.
Cool. Well, you're a radio woman.
Yeah, it's really odd to be on this side of the microphone, so be gentle.
Okay, good. So I guess what I want to talk with you about is about, you just spent over, I believe, about a year and a half or so, even more than that.
It was closer, let's see, it was a year and then like 6 months or so, yeah.
Okay. And so quite a bit of time overseas at a really critical time in the world when a pandemic raged across nations and continents, and even there in Northern Ireland where you were. What was that experience like?
So the pandemic happened near to the end of our studies. So I had been attending classes at Ulster University in Jordanstown, which is maybe 7 miles from Belfast on the coast, between Carrickfergus and Belfast. And, you know, everything went into lockdown. So suddenly all our classes moved online, and we ended up having, I mean, you couldn't do really anything because all of the stores closed down. And at the time, nobody was really sure how to deal with it. So, you know, masking was really a big thing until maybe a little later on, and then you started wearing masks. And, you know, everything, you know, if you went to a store and you know, you could only go to the supermarket, to the local store down the road, you put on a mask, and they had these, they had little gloves. So you could put on like the little plastic gloves to handle everything, which was great until you know, needed to open like a little bag to put your, you know, vegetables in.
So that'd be a challenge, yeah.
It was quite a challenge. The struggle was real.
So. Yeah.
We did a lot of walking. So one of the things that you could do was you could get out of your house and you could go for a walk. You couldn't really drive anywhere to go for a walk. But you could walk as far as your legs could take you.
Right.
And it was wonderful because Belfast has something called a towpath.
Okay.
And the towpath runs the length, not the entire length, but it runs the Lagan River, which kind of goes through the city. And you could go all the way to Lisburn if you wanted to on this towpath.
Okay.
And which is pretty good. It's a fair distance if you went to Lisburn.
And you're quite a runner walker and hiker, and you're an outdoors woman. So it's kind of up your alley in a way.
It is. That's one of my favorite aspects of Belfast is I love that towpath. That towpath is amazing. And people are down it with dogs and all the time. You can go late in the evening and people will be there with their dogs walking them or, you know, just kind of hanging out. It's just beautiful. So you really do get a sense that you're sort of in a country setting. It's like you kind of forget you're in a city. But we would walk up to the Giant's Ring, which is this wonderful passage tomb. It's a Neolithic monument. It's probably 4,000 years old. Wow. So it's a really, it's a beautiful place. It's really, to me, it's very enchanted. I'm into stuff like that. So for me, it was a very special place.
Is that kind of a natural formation?
Well, it's man-made. So you've got a big pile of stones, what they call the remnants of a passage tomb. So you have this huge rock that sits on three other stones, and they have like a little entrance in the middle. And that would have been where you found, I guess, the remains of whomever was buried there.
Okay.
So, and I haven't really found too much information about who was actually buried or if they even found anybody there. It was just, it's one of these really unique ancient sites that really sets that part of Belfast apart from any other place. Mm-hmm. And it is kind of the navel. It's one of the largest, I think, in that area. And there's several passage tombs there. It was not just that one, but that's the one that everybody goes to visit. So
are these the types of places that you're able to explore even more during the pandemic and with the chance to kind of get outside and be active?
You know, usually we would have gone to some place, you know, like we would have gone to the Mourns, or we would have gone to maybe the Mourns are the ones that we spent the most time at because it's practically like the backyard of Belfast. It's really a beautiful place, and it's one of my favorite places in Northern Ireland.
I know you posted a bunch of pictures of the Mourns.
I can't get enough of them. They're amazing.
Describe physically what the Mourns look like. What would we see if we walked there?
You know, to me, it's like stepping into maybe like a Hobbit-type world. Because the Mourns is...
That's how I imagine it.
Yeah, it's sort of close to, I think it's Newcastle. Yeah, it's Newcastle. It's sort of close to this little coastal town. Not very far away is Tullymore Forest Park. And for Game of Thrones fans, you would be really interested to know that they have filming sites there. So these huge, big trees that just are so gnarly and old-looking. And
the old oaks?
Yeah, old oaks and different things and a small river that kind of runs through and winds down through there. And you kind of get lost in it. And it's like being in another time. It's really quite beautiful. So Tullymore Forest Park is there. And Slieve Donard, which is the highest peak, I think it's around 800. Ooh, I wrote that down. It's over 800 meters. It's like 850 or 867 or something to that effect. So it is the tallest mountain in Northern Ireland. And then Slieve Comida, which is right next door, I think it means the guardian mountain or the watching mountain. So you go up, and it's not much shorter, but you can kind of walk out to the promontory, and you can see all of the valley below. It's really, really stunning.
Beautiful.
Yeah, and there's some well-established paths. So if you're one of these people who thinks they can't do mountaineering, it's really not that difficult. I think probably the most difficult part is if you take the main route up from Newcastle to the top of Slieve Donard. That it can be a little challenging, but lots of people do it. They do it at their own speed. And
how long have you been into mountaineering, and what got you excited about it?
So you mentioned that I had been a runner for many years, and I have been probably now going on 17 years, but I love audiobooks when I run. And one of my favorite things to listen to were the stories about mountaineering while I was running. So I got into Thin Air and some of these other...
Oh,
really,
that's a great book.
Yeah, John Krakauer, I think. And if you read Into Thin Air, I think everybody should read Climb, which is by Anatoly Boukreev, which was another mountaineer that was on the Everest trip that all transpired in, I think, 1996. And so I had been really listening to those and thinking, you know, this would be really interesting and fun and daydreaming about it. But, you know, I'm from Texarkana.
Many mountains nearby.
Where does a Texarkana girl find a mountain? And so I was lucky enough. I met someone who was really into mountaineering also. And it just sort of happened that we were able to travel together. And so we've been traveling together for nearly 5 years now. It's really interesting because I've been to places I wouldn't normally have put on my list. We went to Spain and Spain was really interesting, and I never really thought that I would like Spain as much as I liked Ireland, you know, but right. It's a gorgeous place. I mean, you would be surprised at how
many... They have mountains there quite a bit.
Oh, yeah. They have the Picos de Europa and kind of the north area. And then you kind of have the Pyrenees, and then you have also the Sierra Nevada. And so you have several places to choose from if you want to go there. And I've been to the Sierra Nevada, and I've been to the Picos in the north. And they're just gorgeous. They're really craggy, and, you know, you just think, wow,
That's kind of my image of the Pyrenees, yeah.
Yeah. Well, I actually haven't been to the Pyrenees.
Okay. That's
so
next.
That's on the list. That's on the list. So there's a lot of beautiful things. I mean, I've just learned a lot. I've also learned that I'm not especially fond of heights, but that's because I had a fall.
Oh, no. Okay.
Not on a mountain, but on a climbing gym wall, and I broke my leg, and it was no fun. But so I've had to sort of deal with that fear a little bit. But I'm a person who believes that just because you're afraid of it doesn't mean you shouldn't try it. You should try
it.
You should go for it.
In Northern Ireland, you were able to explore a lot. Mm-hmm. What did you feel about kind of connecting with nature there? And did that help you kind of get through the pandemic, just maybe spiritually or just emotionally, kind of have that outlet for you?
There is a beautiful place in the north. It is close to Ballycastle, I think is the name of the town. And it's called Bearhead. And it's a beautiful coast walk. But it's also a really popular place for people to go and climb. And just beneath some of the cliffs there, if you go down from one of the car parks, you enter this green world where the foxglove grows, and you can walk around in this little, like a little glen, and you're just totally by yourself, surrounded by greenery and these trees that look like ants. You think of how you would think ants should look. And you swear that of course it's alive, it's trees, but You swear it's sentient, and it knows you're there.
Right.
And it's just a really, it's unnerving and beautiful at the same time. It's my favorite place, actually, that little spot. It's kind of like my secret little place that I try to go visit. In fact, I went there right before I left. I wanted to say goodbye. But it is, and Fairhead itself is actually just a gorgeous place. So you can walk. It's about a 4-mile trek along the coast. And you just have these beautiful views over the Sea of Moyle, which, if you're familiar with Irish folklore, the Sea of Moyle is where the mythical children of Lear lived for like 300 years at their 900-year sentence as swans. And it's just a gorgeous place. You can see Scotland. You can see the Mullach Cantyre at certain points. You can actually look over and see it.
Okay.
And it's only like 14 miles, I think, at the narrowest point.
Did you learn a lot about Irish mythology while you were there?
You know, I've always loved Irish mythology. So I mean, it was like sort of watching some of those come to life, in a sense, you know, because it is still stories.
Tell us a little bit about what brought you there and what you studied.
I think just love of Ireland probably brought me there. I never really thought I would be as in love with the northern part as I am. But I think I prefer that to just about every... I mean, I don't want to misspeak because every part of Ireland, it's hard to take a bad picture in Ireland. I'll just put it that way. But it's a beautiful place. And because, you know, when you're growing up, you work hard to identify. You know, you're working on your identity. And my last name was always this weird name. It was McCormick. And it had all these C's and O's and M's and K's. And it was, I can remember one of my teachers asking me how to spell it. And I think I was only like maybe 3 or 4 at the time. And I had no idea. So it was just this really weird name. And I got to look it up. And I realized that it was an Irish name or a Scottish name, as it were. And so that sent me sort of on a path, I think, in the beginning.
Yeah.
And I've been on that path since, so to speak.
So that path brought you to the Belfast area to study.
Yeah.
Peace
and conflict studies, which
What is that about?
Wow. So.
And why study it?
You know, Aaron, how long have you been a reporter now?
I'm almost 20 years.
Almost 20 years.
Yeah.
I think I've been, 15 years now? Because I started at the Gazette and I was still so new. I didn't know anything when I started here. But as I have been a reporter, conflict is just an ever present part of what we cover.
Sure is.
And whether that conflict is a violent conflict or a conflict that is just internal conflict through struggles of power, this degree, in my opinion, is a broadly applicable study in conflict, how that plays out in the way people handle conflict and how we report conflict.
Sure.
So one of the things that we studied was a conflict analysis, which in general is sort of what we're supposed to do as reporters, I think, is to look at the roots of the conflict, the sort of the manifestations of that conflict and how it plays out in other people's lives. So you have to see that conflict for all angles. And if these studies did nothing for me, they really brought home just how important it is and how difficult it is to really report on conflicts on any level. So
that's true. And we've had a crash course in the last couple of years, haven't we?
Yeah, it's been interesting to watch that from across the pond, so to speak.
Yeah, did your perspective on those issues shift, seeing it maybe from the perspective of the people of Northern Ireland, who I think are just so resilient to have gone through what they did during the Troubles?
I think I just didn't remove myself from it literally. I was literally removed from it, but I think I just tried to look at it in a sense that everybody here has something that they want to get across. Everybody has something they want to say. And if we could just concentrate on what we have in common, we could make it, I think. And which is, I think, sort of like the foundations of peace building is
right
to sort of become one tribe, for lack of a better way to put it.
Right. The undergraduate school where I attended, Earlham College, which is a liberal arts college in Indiana with Quaker principles, had a peace and global studies program. And, you know, the people who were in that program they were always good listeners, always thought. And so it seemed like that was kind of a lesson there.
Yeah, I think that that's important. I think we need to be good listeners. I wrote a lot about peace journalism, which if anybody out there is interested, Johan Galtung is a peace scholar, the primary peace scholar that came up with that. And basically, it's looking at news in a way where you present options of writing the news that make... I wrote this down so I can actually get it again. So the official definition, according to McGoldrick and Lynch, is when editors and reporters make choices of what to report and how to report it that creates opportunities for society at large to consider the value of nonviolent response. In my opinion, and in my interpretation of that, it is not only exercising forethought when we go into a situation to report on it, it is also exercising the understanding that just the stories of people bring us together. So small town newspapers, like what I consider the Gazette, and even to some extent, the radio station where I work.
Oh, absolutely.
Are important in that because we don't always look at the politics of something. We look at the people because they live here. They're our neighbors. And so we see them for who they are, not necessarily their politics. And that extreme that people get into with the politics is much less. So we can look at people as individuals who have a story, who are important, whose contribution in life or to someone else may be to see the world through their eyes and their story.
Right. You know, part of your work at our local NPR affiliate is doing features. Mm-hmm. And I think as a features reporter myself, I always respect people who can tell a story about anyone out in the street. Everyone has a story.
It's true. It is so true. And maybe this is just my Sagittarius sign. I can be fascinated just about anything. I can find some value or lesson in it. So,
yeah. Well, now something that's peaceful is music.
Oh, yes. And what better than the harp to be
peaceful? That's
right. So I'm just going to tell you guys that I have taken a whole year and some change off from this harp because it's a 35-pound harp. It's not little.
Right.
And I cringe when I think about airport staff handling it. So I didn't take my harp with me overseas, which was sad because I all of a sudden found myself with a lot of time to practice and no harp.
So is it nice to have it back?
It is. You know, you'll hear a lot of wrong notes. I'll just tell you that right now.
Well, we're going to be okay about that.
Yeah.
Play us a song.
Tell us exactly what kind of harp this is.
Okay. So this is a Lyon and Healy. It's the smallest of their harps. It's a lever harp, which means that there are levers at the tops that control whether I play a sharp or a flat. Unlike a pedal harp, which you would find in an orchestra or one of those settings where you would, you know, attend a big musical gathering, where you use the pedals at the bottom to change from sharp, flat, and natural. So if I want flats, I actually have to tune them in, and then I can flip the lever up and make them a sharp, make them natural. So, and I have mine actually tuned in the key of E flat, which is quite common amongst harpists. That makes me sound a whole lot better than I am with it. I play a lot of things tuned in C, which is generally like probably the most simple. So if I mess this up, we can edit it.
Yes.
All right. So I'm going to move the microphone, and I'm going to try to play for you when I have the least amount of chance to mess up. So that was that's actually not written. That's my own rendition of Bonnie Portmore.
What's the song?
It's called Bonnie Portmore. So anybody out there who listened to it and heard the mistakes, well,
that's probably no one else who knows that song.
Mm. No, actually, that's a really great song. If you remember, so I'm of the Highlander generation, not the Outlander generation. I'm of the Highlander generation. And so,
what does that mean? I need to know what that means.
Oh, there can be only one.
Okay.
So Highlander were these immortals who could never die. And the series was Adrian Paul. And he was a Highlander from ancient Scotland to basically he never died. And the only way you can kill a Highlander is if you cut their head off. And I know it's terrible. And I study peace and conflict studies. I mean,
you never saw that movie?
Never saw that. Yeah, never seen that movie.
The movie, wasn't it Christopher Lambert in the movie? Yeah.
I believe it was. Yeah. I do know that. Yeah.
So anyway, but this song, Bonnie Portmore, was often played during the movie. And I always thought it was just beautiful. And so I just sort of plucked it out one day when I was sort of fiddling about with the harp. I mean, a lot of what I do is just meditative. I don't really... Like, I have a few songs that I play. I'll try to play you another one.
Okay.
But this one, I just sort of put it together. And, yes, it's probably not totally correct. So it's how I hear it.
That's the best way to hear it. Now, what brought you to the harp?
I'm going to tell this story because I think this person needs to be remembered forever. Mm. So many years ago, I met a young woman. Her name was Emily Coulter. If you remember Emily,
I do.
Or anybody in the community, if they remember Emily,
I do.
She was a pretty fearless lass.
Yeah.
She had a condition called epidermolysis bullosa. And I didn't know that. When I first met her, I thought she was 10 years old. I thought she was much younger. But it turns out she was only a few years younger than myself. And this disease, or this genetic condition, it's not really a disease. You know, they call them butterfly children because if you just brush up against them, it creates this terrible blister. And she was wrapped, you know, all over with these bandages. And I thought she was a burn victim. And so like most things, when I don't understand it, I try to understand it and I research it. And I usually write stories about it. So Emily was wonderful. She came on and she did a 3-part series with me on her condition and some of the travails that she experienced as a result of it. But we became friends, as in the case of many of my interviews.
Yeah.
And she was just such a wonderful, fearless person. She loved to sing. And her mother tells the story that she would hire a cab to go to Fat Jack's to do karaoke. And I mean, if you saw her, you would think she was just so frail and small, but she just was not afraid to do anything.
As someone who's been in Fat Jack's fairly regularly, I would have been surprised to see her there.
She was unique. And she would sing, and she had the most otherworldly voice. She sang, she used to sing this song called, it was the Alanis Morissette song, Uninvited. And her small soprano voice would make the hair on the back of your neck stand up. She was just, it was beautiful, absolutely gorgeous. When she got really ill near the end, because she, I think, developed a cancer that was particular to her condition, I remember thinking, because she absolutely loved Paris, and she wanted to go to Paris so badly. She never, you know, she didn't get a chance to make it there because she had that condition and it made it difficult for her to travel. And I thought to myself, I can't sing. I truly cannot sing. I have a soprano voice, but it's better if I sing with a group of people.
Okay.
And so I love the harp. I always have loved the harp, and I loved Ireland. And so I did a little research and found this small harp. It's one of the very small Pakistani-made harps. And they're not great, but they do the job. They're really nice. And very quickly after I got it, it was a lap harp, not to be confused with this harp. This harp is not.
What I thought we were getting.
Yeah. And so it was a lap harp. So it was only like 21 strings. And it was portable. And I decided maybe that would best go to my cousin. And so I bought this harp, and I bought this harp from an anthropologist who was a British anthropologist. She was in Washington, D.C., and she had done some work in Gabon and met an artist there and wanted to bring that artist to Washington, D.C., and they'd managed, I think, to get him a grant to do most of what he needed, but he needed a plane ticket, and she had really no way to get him a plane ticket, except that she had bought this harp that she'd never played. And so she put it on eBay, and I had researched and done all my homework, and I saw this harp, and it was slightly below market value, and I just fell in love with it. And
it's
so
beautiful.
Well, she and I, you know, corresponded, and it took about 2 weeks for us to actually get the harp. You know, it's kind of a big feat to get it from Washington, D.C. down to Arkansas.
How did that happen? How did it get here?
By a big truck and a specialized agency and extra money to get it. It was like $200 extra, I think.
Specialized agency.
Well, you don't just ship a harp. You just, not one this size anyway. And anyway, so it arrived on my doorstep. I took the day off because I didn't know what time of day it was coming to receive this harp. And I got it out of the box and I set it in the living room and I stared at it for a little while.
Wow.
But
what was it like seeing it there?
Well, I mean, I knew how to tune them, but I'd never had, like, this has really pretty gut strings. It has a really mellow tone to it. It's just really nice. And I just looked at it, and then I took the tuning key and started tuning it a little bit. And lo and behold, I mean, I've had it ever since, and that was like 2006 or 7, I think. So I actually had bought the harp. Gosh, I'm trying to remember when when she passed. I can't remember. I had bought the harp first. Anyway.
But were you able to play it for her?
I wasn't, actually. Oh. No. And that's why I'm thinking I actually bought the harp afterwards, because it was that sort of feeling that I can't sing, but I can play. You know, maybe I could play the harp. And so that's how I was able to, you know, that's what drew me the harp to begin with. And that's what kind of drew me to Ireland, too, because when I think of her, I think of how fearless she was and how somebody who is as small as she was, and she was tiny.
She was. I remember her. I remember her walking around downtown. I saw her sometimes drop at one of the churches there near the Gazette. I remember seeing her around town, and she looked pretty fearless.
She's very fearless. And so I thought, I'm an able-bodied person. I've always wanted to go to Ireland. We should go to Ireland. I should go. And so I actually booked a harp program. Now, I'd been once before, but I booked a harp program by myself with a renowned harpist there with whom I was familiar with through the music that I had been playing.
Okay.
And it was a magical experience. It sort of opened up the door for all other things that I've done. So.
What was music like in Ireland when you were there?
Oh, well.
Did you see live music?
When I was taking the harp program, we experienced a lot of the live music. As I've traveled around here and there, not so much. And certainly during COVID times, that was not happening at all.
Okay.
But, I mean, there are sessions. Like, you can go to different pubs and listen to sessions. And certain pubs, especially in the Republic, which is, you know, the Republic of Ireland, will have places, Lisconnor, some of these little coastal villages that are known with they're kind of touristy, but you can go and they're really fun and they have like sessions and they'll go far into the night. So, but it's quite jovial and beautiful.
Yeah. When I think of music in Ireland, I think of just something that wants to inspire me of all people to get on the dance floor and bust around and do a little jig.
Oh, no, it's just it's a beautiful place, and I like having been in Ireland, and I'm a tourist. I love tacky tourist shops, just full confession here. I like my tacky tourist shops, but I like also not to be a tourist, and I think having lived there for a little while, and one of the things that they do there often is it's a very walking-oriented place, so people walk often back and forth to get their groceries. You'll see people all the time with little bags, and you'll even see people with trolleys and different things. So it was nice to go and not really be a tourist and sort of be, you know, until I talked to people.
It's a different feeling.
Yeah, it's a different feeling. And
I lived in London for 3 months going to school. And it was not like being a tourist.
Yeah, you get involved in the day-to-day things, like, you know, going to get groceries and trying to figure out where is this ingredient that you bought in the U.S. but they don't have here?
So. Getting to the fish and chips shop before they close.
Yes, the fish and chip. I tell you, if there are fish and chips, should be the official dish of Northern Ireland.
Yes.
They have the best fish and chip shops there. And if you're ever in Ballycastle, if you're ever in Ballycastle, the best place for you to go is Morton's.
Okay, that's it, people.
It's wonderful. And that's over by Fairhead, if you remember. So.
Now, have you seen the program called The Dairy Girls?
Ah, yes, I have.
Okay. Now, is that humor true to the people there?
Is Dallas true to Texas?
Yes, it is.
No,
in a weird way.
I think that it's probably just a really over-exaggerated viewpoint of their humor. But it is fairly, I mean, not everybody's like, that's like saying, you know, everybody has the same sense of humor. That's not actually true. But yes, it's very blunt and very sort of dry occasionally.
Yeah, blunt and dry.
But it's quite, I love the accent. The Northern Irish accent is, I think, the most unique.
And
it's very difficult. Like, I've tried and I get laughed at. And I try not to do it too often because I want to be really good at it. But I make a dog's dinner out of it, so to speak, as they would say there, with my Southern accent.
Now, do we have time for some more music?
I don't know. Do we? Okay, so here we go.
All the latest news and more is always right at hand with the Texarkana Gazette mobile app. Updates and breaking news alerts throughout the day keep you up to speed on everything happening in Texarkana and beyond. There's even a daily digital replica of our print edition. All the features you love, like puzzles and our special sections, are right there. It's like having the whole paper in your pocket or purse. Best of all, it's free to download. Look for the Texarkana Gazette app in Google Play or the Apple App Store today.
Can you tell us about that tune?
So that tune is written by Thomas Moore, or the words were anyway. And it's about someone who wants to tell their wife, their loved one, that they love them no matter how old they get, for all their young charms, for their endearing charms. So the name of the tune is Believe Me If All Those Endearing and Young Charms.
That's lovely.
It's a lovely sentiment. So.
It is a lovely sentiment.
Has that been redone as like an American folk song? It sounds familiar to me. Do you know?
Does.
You know, I don't know. It's a popular song, so it's quite likely it could be. I'm not familiar. I mean, I have a lot of writing. This is a Janet Harbison book, so this was the lady I took the harp program from. And actually, this isn't even exactly how she wrote it, the way I played it for you. Mm. It's sort of my own take on that. So, you know, if it doesn't come out just right, it's not her fault.
It's your fault if it sounds even better. Mm.
Aaron, you're so sweet. That's very kind of you. No, it's a great song. So here, I'll read it. It's Thomas Moore was a very famous poet in the early 1800s who set a good deal of his verse to music of the old harpers collected by Edward Bunting at the Belfast Harpers Festival in 1792. Believe Me If All Those Endearing Young Charms was his most popular song, and many hundreds of thousands of copies were sold, more than any one piece of pop music ever. So, as you were saying, Carl, it could well have been remade into something else.
We're gonna investigate this after the show.
Sure.
So I think maybe I have time for one more question. You know, what did you find out about the people of Northern Ireland? What kind of... in their time there, and I don't know if you're going to be going back. I think that's maybe possible.
Oh, yeah, I have plans to go back.
Okay, good.
That's one of those things that it's, you know, it's hard when you feel like you're tethered to two separate places. Yes. And they're so far apart. But, you know, Texarkana is inextricably embossed on my heart. Yes. I can't go away without being still part of it. I am simultaneously here, even when I'm there, which I know sounds very strange, but it's true. My family's here. My friends are here. But I equally feel as connected to Northern Ireland. And in some ways, I sort of find commonality with it because, you know, Texarkana has this funny bi-state vibe, you know. So you have Arkansas and Texas. And, you know, there you have two cultures in one place.
And tell me about those two cultures.
Yeah, well, you have you have people who are Irish Catholic, and then you have the Protestants, and you have this sort of these two cultures, and you can even see like different flags in different places, and right. So I'm used to seeing different flags and having two
right.
sides to one coin, and so I think that's why I love it so much is because I appreciate that about it, and I appreciate the people there. And just like we have some beautiful and wonderful people here. I could tell you so many stories. I told you I was a runner, and I've had more people come and check on me and be, you know, they're there for me if I need them or something happens. But people there are just as wonderful and just as kind, and it's not an unfamiliar feeling to be there.
Well, so you felt like you were home when you were there.
Yeah, I do. And I've managed to meet some wonderful people. And one of the interesting things that I was able to do, it was a unique thing after I graduated, because I just didn't have a lot to do because I had finished school and graduated, and all of a sudden I had no papers to write. So
that's a glorious feeling, isn't it?
Well, it's when in pandemic, it just feels like you're lost and I needed something to do.
Oh,
and
that's right.
I didn't have the station to keep me busy. So I joined a program there for leadership. So I took a leadership program through an organization there. And oddly enough, the individual who put the leadership program together was the wife of one of my former professors in the Peace and Conflict Studies program. So all of the things that she was teaching about leadership and about coexistence and different aspects of leadership fit into what I was taught in the classes. So it was sort of like it dovetailed really nicely. And then my professor sent me a note and said that I think I've realized that my wife is your leadership advisor, your leadership teacher. So, and it was a really great experience, and I met a lot of people there. It was all through Zoom. We Zoom met every Tuesday for a while, and it culminated with sort of the planning of a project. Unfortunately, the project in the middle of COVID was very difficult to get done. And so I think we sort of decided that we would maybe plant some trees in Belfast. And that was sort of because the money was available for that.
Right.
And we could gain the funding for that.
Well, that's a nice way to leave Northern Ireland planting trees.
Yeah. Well, and I still correspond with those ladies, actually, from that program because we still are sort of in the process of getting that done.
Okay. Well, Sabrina McCormick, thank you so much for being here at the Gazette office.
You guys have
it's good to have an old friend here.
It's good to be back. It's good to be amongst friends. I've missed you all very much. So,
great. Thanks for telling us your story today.
Thanks.
On the Line is a Texarkana Gazette podcast recorded in Star Bear Studio, right here in downtown Texarkana, USA. The show was written, produced, and edited by Carl Richter. News stories are based on Gazette staff reports. Texarkana Gazette podcasts are made possible in part by a grant from the Google News Initiative Journalism Emergency Relief Fund. I'll see you next week on The Line.